Give yourself some love with our self-care programs at hrnradio.com.
Hi, everybody. Helping yourself to know how is why you're here with Dr. Greer, and you're listening to the Doctor on Call Hour at healthylife.net. Now, before we get started with what's going to be an absolutely amazing conversation with my first guest, I promise you that, I wanted to take a moment to thank every one of you, my loyal listeners. You know, you are the reason I've been doing this show for the last 11 years. And right now, so many of us need additional support and insight because of these unprecedented and challenging times. And as always, you know, I truly want to help. And that's why I've written books that I know can and will help you with your issues, whether they're about relationships, betrayals, or, which so many people, unfortunately, we're all going through this, the loss of loved ones. I've been blessed with an overwhelming amount of positive response to these books, and that's why I feel so confident in recommending them to you now. I invite you to visit the books section on my website, drjanegreer.com. You'll find the books I'm speaking about, including What About Me for Dealing with Selfishness, How Could You Do This to Me for Dealing with Betrayal, and the own amazing book that I was inspired to write after my devastating loss of my mother suffering that loss, The Afterlife Connection, How to Communicate with Our Departed Loved Ones. Just click on the book cover to order directly from Amazon. I know these books can help, and they can make really caring gifts for the holidays, or really any time. And now it is time for Shrink Wrap on Call. That's when we hear from the people behind the creative curtain, their newest endeavors, how their minds work, and what makes them tick. It's about what we can learn from the trials and triumphs of celebrity relationships. So let's get started and welcome to the show. Today we're going to be conversing with actor, producer, speaker, and author Gregor Collins, and health and culture freelance writer and editor Sarah Gaines-Levy. Joining me right now is my first guest, Gregor Collins. His first book, The Accidental Caregiver, Part 1, is a memoir of his unconventional and inspirational love story with Maria Altman, a Holocaust refugee portrayed by Helen Mirren in the movie Woman in Gold. Now, his new memoir, The Accidental Caregiver Part 2, was published earlier this year, and I am so excited and thrilled to have him on the show to speak with him today. So, welcome, Gregor. It's truly a pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much. And let me just say this really quick. I've acquired a puppy recently, so she's in her crate and enjoying all kinds of goodies, so I don't think you hear the occasional, like, yelp or something. My puppy, so I apologize.
Well, can I say that that is the most wonderful acquisition, because that is love for heart and soul forever. And she's a very lucky little pup, and you will be very blessed with her for a very long time to come. And one more thing, lots of good luck with the paper trading and the housebreaking. Because a puppy, one thing, before you housebreak them, they can really break you. So.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no, I've been, it's always harder than you can ever imagine. So, I mean, if she's as adorable as she is a terror sometimes.
What kind of a dog and what's her name?
Well, she's a Vizsla.
Oh, she's going to be a big girl.
Oh, she's just kind of medium sized, but they're bred to be hunting dogs. I'm not a hunter, but extremely. I mean, they're known for, if you're not an active, athlete and runner, then this is not the dog for you. So it's we'll get along. We both like exercise.
Well, you two are going to cover a lot of ground together, and you know what? You were a hunter, in fact. Your movie, The Woman in Gold, was all about the hunt and securing and perseverance and tenacity. So before we talk about that, let's just talk about you for a minute, because you're quite remarkable. You're an actor, a producer. I mean, you began your career in entertainment as a producer of reality television, of course, in L.A. I mean, that's the place for reality TV, right? And then you shifted to acting on stage, TV, independent films. Now you're in New York, and as if you're not going to stop, you've added contributing writer for major publications to your resume. So now, tell us, how did you get into the caregiving job for Maria Altman? How did the movie The Woman in Gold come about? I mean, it was remarkable.
Right. Well, it was completely by accident. So I'm in L.A. Doing the acting thing. I started in reality TV, and then I studied to become an actor. And
what shows did you do in reality TV?
My first show was with a show called Blind Date. That was back in 2000. Did you ever see that with the thought bubbles over the skaters?
I don't remember now.
Okay. Well, it's you know, we would send people on blind dates, and they would go on a date, and then we'd have writers that would write thought bubbles too and jokes as the date's going on, and so it was actually one of the more entertaining, fun little dating shows. It was right around when Survivor was coming out, so it was like reality TV was still new.
What's her name?
Her name is Lucy. I tried to time her nap.
They don't work like that. In fact, quite honestly, I got rid of Riley, my little Coton de Tulier. I put him outside the room because I thought, you know what, I don't need him starting to squeak because they want your attention, so they squeak.
Yeah. And the thing with, I just moved from New York in March to Washington, D.C., so my condo is kind of like an open, almost lofty thing, so I don't really have a closed door. But anyway.
It's all right. She's welcome. All puppies are welcome.
My first show was with Blind Date, and then I just kind of bounced around reality TV for about 4 or 5 years. As a freelance producer on shows like Ripley's Believe It or Not, and I actually ran a Girls Gone Wild tour, which I didn't tell my mother about.
Fun!
That was quite a 3 months of my life. So I did the reality TV thing, and then I sort of stumbled into an acting class after I was kind of getting a little bit kind of bored with reality TV, and I thought, well, people are saying, why don't you, try acting? You'd be a good actor, whatever. So I just stumbled into a class, and that became my obsession. And then I did some acting, and then that's when I get a call from my friend Tom saying he just got a job with a woman that he's taking care of, and he asked me if I would help out. So I know I'm jumping ahead a lot.
Well, just a second. Let's back up for one step and go back to the acting for a moment. So you threw yourself into acting. It became your passion. Did you enjoy it? Did you do work that you actually enjoyed? And how much time was it between when you were immersed in the acting till you got this call to take you in a completely different direction?
Right. I did enjoy the acting. The thing with an acting, especially film acting, is you enjoy the craft of it, but the hard part about film acting is that you're mostly in rooms trying to get a job, and you're not really getting a chance to act unless you get on stage and do some theater. So,
right.
I loved the acting, but I think after a while, the grind of having to just jump through so many hoops just to be able to get invited to the dinner table, it just kind of wore a little bit. But I loved it because it was around the time where, everybody was making their own films and crowdfunding was starting. Kickstarter was just launching. And so it was an exciting time because we all worked together as caterers at the Music Center, and then we would make films outside of that. So it was a really fun time. In true independent film, I mean, Hollywood likes to make independent films that they like to think are independent films, but true independent films where we would be raising our own money and making our own films.
Interesting, so interesting. So then, how much time had lapsed at the point that Tom had called you? And it sounds like the acting, the passion was there for the work, but to get the work became discouraging. So it's almost like you were ready for this opportunity.
I think so. I was ready, if not, subconsciously, I think I was ready. But I still believe, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I came out to Hollywood to be an actor, and this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I mean, I don't care that deep down I almost loathe that what I'm doing. on the surface, I love it, but deep down I'm thinking, geez, man, this is a tough racket, and there was that angst of, I have to become a Hollywood star because I came out here to be a Hollywood star, so that's what I have to do. And so you're sort of kind of fighting that fight, and then Tom calls me and he says he answered an ad on Craigslist, and he says, look, there's this 92-year-old woman that was looking for a caregiver, and so I've become her caregiver. And she's great. You have to come meet her. And at that point, there was no talk of a job, but it was more like, come meet this amazing woman that I'm taking care of.
Incredible. Gregor, that is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it was like the universe really kind of was knocking on my door saying, look, you know, this is the plan for your life. You're going to be shifting towards this amazing experience. But even though I had no idea,
right,
that this is going to come about. And so I kind of blew him off for a while because I was, you know, I had auditions to go to and I was a busy guy trying to make it in Hollywood. So I sort of was like, okay, well, yeah, I'll come meet her sometime, whatever. And
right.
A few weeks later, he said, Gregor, we actually need another caregiver. We had a caregiver quit and it's just me and she kind of needs, you know, people. I mean, she wasn't, she was mobile and everything, but she still needed people around the clock just to make sure. Please come in and meet her, and we'll see. And I immediately kind of resisted, and I thought, you know, I came to Hollywood to be an actor, not a character.
You had places to go and things to do.
I know, and I don't know. Also, I don't know anything about medicine. I'm scared of hospitals. I'm the worst, like, qualified character in the but, you know, he said to me, look, Gregor, I know you don't have any experience, but look, you're like the... If I could think of one friend I trust the most, it's you, and I just have a feeling you would like her. And so I think it was really that outside force that was just sort of, you know, I mean, it was just, you know, the makings of something that was just fake.
You're exactly right. You're describing destiny unfolding, and people don't even realize it when they're walking destiny's path, and there they are, you know, shuffling along, and wow, so amazing.
Right, right. So then I finally, I'm so sorry,
she's got to do her thing.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. Anyway, hold on, you know, this is ridiculous. I have to give her a piece of, I'm so sorry.
Maybe give her a little treat. Even though it'll... Sometimes you just have to reward bad behavior because it's the only way to get rid of it.
I'll do it, but I'm going to have to do it. Speaker, we can just take this one and get right back. There you go.
Good girl.
I decided, I was like, okay, fine, I'll come meet her. I mean, I'm a good friend, and I wasn't so obsessed that I couldn't be a good friend. I knew that this was important that I met her. So I sort of went there not telling Tom I'm not going to take the job necessarily, but I just found it interesting, so let's meet her. And so I went to, she lived in Cheviot Hills, which is sort of southern Beverly Hills, and I showed up and I met her, and it was like that's when there was this sort of love at first sentence connection. She had this incredible Viennese accent that just doesn't exist anymore, this sort of pre-war accent. And I just fell in love with her, you know, at that moment. And then my life sort of changed at that moment.
Remarkable. So let me ask you, in that first meeting, was it a meeting of the minds? Was it more of a heart connection? Was it one thing? You know, sometimes somebody says one thing that just knocks your socks off, or it just kind of opens your mind. And was there any one thing that resonated with you, or was it just the totality of the experience of her energy?
It was everything. But you know, she was such an amazing. She would like listen to me with her heart and not her ears. She just, there was like, we both very playful and we like to joke around, and so I have a very playful personality, so she was so playful. She was like 92 going on 22 as far as that playful intellect and always wanting to make a joke and find the charm and everything, and so we were like two peas in a pod, and her son was there and Tom was there, and soon we felt like we were the only ones in the room. We totally forgot that Tom and
a little West Side Story.
Yeah, exactly. That ironically that's what I called my book before The Accidental Caregiver. I said, I just met a girl named Maria. I wanted to call it that.
Amazing.
But then, you know, people say, oh, you're going to get copyrighted.
Right, and they would get mixed up, but it was truly a love story. So you went there, you met her, it was instant chemistry and love, and signed on for the job as caretaker. How did her story unfold to you? Was it one day you were sitting around and she started to tell it to you in bits and pieces? Like, how did the story unfold and suddenly look you in the eye and say, all right, we've got to go get cracking and get on this, and then, you know, lo and behold, it's a major film.
Yes. Well, and let me say, the film was made about her. Like, I wasn't involved in the film. It was made about her. It was like a courtroom drama, you know, with Helen Mirren and Ryan Reynolds.
Right.
And I had, my story with her was a totally different perspective on the same woman. So it was the, you know, but anyway, but that movie wouldn't come until about a year after her death. And when I met her, I didn't see just this 93-year-old woman. I didn't really know much other than Tom had told me she had this pretty interesting backstory and upbringing in pre-war Vienna. But the first couple of weeks, Maria and I would walk around the block, and she would tell me all about her aunt. She had an aunt Adele, who would host these incredible salons with all the artistic luminaries of the day, and anybody in the music or the art world would come to their Maria's uncle's house, Uncle Ferdinand and Aunt Adele, their house, and have tea. And she was just a little kid walking around at that time, and so. He just started introducing me to this whole new world of art and culture, and the fact that I was speaking to somebody who, her parents would go to parties where Puccini himself would be playing the piano, you know.
Breathtaking.
So it's just,
you can't even imagine it.
And I would constantly be going home and Googling all the names that she would say, and I was just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this lady. It was enough that I was taking care of this 93-year-old lady. I mean, that was enough to be life-changing, and let alone her being who she was, you know.
Right. And all the names she would drop would be jaw-dropping, it sounds like.
Right.
You know, she'd drop a name casually, and you go Google it and go, oh, my God, Puccini. It's like amazing.
I know.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
Yeah, no, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so how long did you wind up taking care of her, and at what point into the relationship did you realize that this is really a story for the world, people to know? I really need to capture who she is and what we're sharing.
Well, it didn't take long for me to just start writing notes, because I being a writer, I'm just naturally a storyteller writer, so I would be impelled to hear something incredible that you would say, whether it be heartbreaking or these anecdotes from her childhood, and just write them down. And then after a few weeks, I decided that maybe I should be starting, maybe I could write a book, and every chapter would be a day in the life of me and her, and then every chapter I would reach my own enlightenment and confront my struggle of, wait, I'm supposed to be an actor, but I'm a caregiver, and then also just highlight all her, you know, sort of tell her story over various different anecdotes and different chapters. So I started to write it, and I even showed her some of the. I told her I was writing a book on her, and she got a kick out of it. And I even showed her some of what I was writing,
Well, you know, it's amazing because you were describing her childhood as one of, you know, aristocratic and royalty, if you will, with all the art and people of education and talent. And you immortalized her in the same way. I mean, the end of her life with you, you brought her back to the roots of her family. She was, you know, sharing the artistic, the talent, the wisdom that she had lived and accrued and was sharing with you. So it was really, you were giving her quite a gift, and she was passing on what she lived and learned.
Completely, yeah. No, that's beautifully said, yes.
Thank you. But, you know, I just wanted to say, too, Gregor, your concept was so brilliant, because what you really did was you took her wisdom, which she was sharing with you, and you integrated it into your own life, made it come to life for you in a way that made your life even more meaningful. And it was through your own sort of self-reflection and personal experience that you said, you know what, if she can do this with me and for me, she can do this with everybody, and hence the book was born.
Absolutely. And I mean, I knew I wanted to because I, you know, it was, I was a first-time author, and I sort of went through the author thing that, oh, geez, I'm not an author, and I, you know, how am I going to, like, am I even worthy of writing a book? And then I just wanted to make the book just a completely, not a good or a bad book or anything. Just I just wanted to be totally honest with what I was going through and my emotions, and I wanted to be totally vulnerable, and I wanted to just make it my own, and almost like I was writing it for my own edification and not publication. I just wanted to really write how much this woman meant to me and how incredible she was and how perplexed I was at how much we were connecting, and even her parents were, I mean, even her family was like, oh my gosh, we've never seen her sort of act like this towards anybody else. And so I just wanted to be brutally honest, and I think that's what its asset was, is that people told me that they thought they felt like they were in the same room with me, learning about Maria and growing and all the going through all these emotional roller coasters. They really thought that they were, you know, in the same room. So.
Remarkable. A truly remarkable experience, and one that we are absolutely riveted to hear more about. So stay with us, because I can't believe it's already time for a break. Gregor Collins is my guest. We're going to be back in just a minute for more Shrink Wrap on Call with Dr. Greer at HealthyLife.net.
Uplifting Talk, HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Shrink Wrap on Call with Dr. Greer at HealthyLife.net. My guest is producer, director, actor, and author of the memoirs The Accidental Caregiver, Parts 1 and 2. Both are available at Amazon. And you can also explore more about Gregor Collins, his projects, and his presentation schedule at gregorcollins.com. Before we went to break, I wanted to say that, you know, Maria really is, it sounds like she changed your views on love. And I was wondering, did being deeply in love with Maria and being focused on her for so many years, did that enhance or inhibit your own romance and romantic life?
I think it, I'd like to say it enhanced, but I think, to be honest, it inhibited a little bit, because I think I really fell for Maria in so many ways. I think I almost considered her my girlfriend for 3 years, and I thought I was so loyal to her, and I was so caught up in her world that I felt that I didn't, you know, I don't know if I thought to myself, maybe somebody else would never measure up, and but it was also combined with, I know that she's not going to be here for a long time, and I wanted to dedicate everything I have to her, because who knows, she could be gone tomorrow. So I think in a way it inhibited in a good way, at least while she was around.
Yes, you were completely devoted. I mean, you've received beautiful reviews on your books from the most respected reviewers like Publishers Weekly, who wrote, Collins' affection for Maria comes out on every page, variously reverent, poignant, awestruck, and romantic, which is so profound. And you know what, did you ever see the movie Harold and Maude?
Oh yes.
It's a little Harold and Maude there, where Harold says to Maude, but Maude, I love you, and she says, that's wonderful, Harold, now go love some more. He was so devoted to her.
Yes, and that's a movie I reference a lot, just because, I mean, not a lot, because it does have Maria and I, you know, they had a physical somewhat, you know, there was that physical romance.
Right.
But there wasn't that with Maria and I. So I am careful when I reference that. But like when I wrote the screenplay for it, and I said it was sort of like a Harold and Maude meets Tuesdays with Morrie or something.
Right.
But yeah, no, Harold and Maude. I find that Europeans know Harold and Maude. They know it like the back of their hand, and then Americans don't know the movie as much.
So interesting. Well, yeah, it's a little more irreverent, and the Europeans are so very open-minded. So while we still have some time left, tell us about Part 2, which was published earlier this year. What's it about? How did it come about?
Part 2 was definitely not planned at all, which goes along with the accidental theme. In 2017, I got this random Facebook message. I published, the first one was 2012, and then, you know, I had done various, I'd done some private engagements and did some speaking about it in small groups. And then I got this Facebook message from this random person named Diane, and she said, I'm at the London Heathrow Airport, and I just want you to know that I'm reading your book, The Accidental Caregiver, and it's very moving, and I just wanted to say I'm really enjoying it. And she's like, I've never written an author, and I don't even know if this is you, but if this is you, you know, I just wanted to tell you that. And so I got back to her, and long story short, it turns out she was the president of an organization called the Women's International Zionist Organization, and she headed the chapter in Australia. And she said she would love to invite you for a month-long speaking tour.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
With 10 cities in Perth, Melbourne, and Sydney. And so it just went from there, and it told me that as I was hopping around Kangaroo Land, it just told me that, wow, this story, you know, it didn't end when Maria died. It's only just beginning, and it's more about really my inspiration to go out and just become a better man from this experience. And I just realized that, you know, there needed to be a part two about everything after Maria passed away, and all that I've done, I've turned it into a play, and I'm going around the world talking about her. And I was so perplexed about it. It was almost like I was so perplexed at my obsession in spreading Maria's love around the world that I thought, well, let me just start another book and just address all these crazy things that are going on in my life as a result of this caregiving job that I never even really wanted.
hence accidental, but an accident that was meant clearly to happen. So you've been so blessed with your experience and the way Maria so dramatically transformed your life and has really made you the conduit for transforming so many other people's lives. Is there any one thing in particular that you want people to take away? Is there one thing that you took away, or it's too expansive to whittle it down to the one thing that's so meaningful?
I think I've always been naturally just wanting to follow. I mean, it sounds so cliche, but follow my heart. And I feel like I just feel like let me think. I mean, there's so many things that I would take. So in other words, what, based on my experience with Maria, what have I taken away? I think you're not, you know, you really have to, go after what's in front of you. I think when I first met Maria, I was still struggling and thinking, why am I here? I'm supposed to be doing this. But once I...
So she felt like a mistake.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, wait, this is not right. This isn't part of the plan. And so I think it taught me that you really have to really enjoy and love your life and love the things that come into your life and just look at it from a grander perspective. Like, this is happening because, you know, all these unforeseen things are getting to...
To be open-minded, it sounds like, to be open to what you're least expecting.
Exactly. Because I think all the great moments in our lives are accidents. I think the things that we never planned and the things that we sort of fall upon, and I think those are the things that are evidence of us just being open, like, you know, something random happening in life.
Terrific.
Being open to it and embracing it.
Well, I want to thank you. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you today and reminding us all to be open, to keep our minds open, most especially to keep our hearts open to love. Listeners, visit GregorCollins.com for links to Gregor's Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Also, you can check out his very cool interviews from his micro-documentary, Humans in My Phone. You'll love it. And I'm Dr. Jane Greer. You've been listening to Shrink Wrap on Call on HealthyLife.net. When we come back from the break, writer, editor, Sarah Gaines-Levy is going to join me, so stay with us. Back in a minute.
Environmentally sound for your mind. HRNradio.com.
Well, welcome Welcome back to Shrink Wrap On Call. I'm Dr. Jane Greer, and now it's so fitting and timely because my first guest wrote an entire book about the accidental caregiver, and we were talking about accidents and destiny. And my second guest, he had a puppy. Gregor just had a little puppy that was taking his time and attention, Lucy. My second guest, Sarah Gaines Levy, just had a baby, and puppies and babies are completely unpredictable. They make life come to a halt, and you stop for them. They don't stop for you. So with that being said, the accidental timing of all this is the shrink wrap segment, which was going to be introduced with my wonderful Danish Muller. We were going to bring it to you in January because of being chock full of guests. We're going to start it now because the accidental timing is going to enable us to bring to you our new shrink wrap segment. Dana, let's tell them about the shrink wrap segment. Could it be more perfect? Are we right?
I know. Dr. Jane, I am so excited to do this. Oh, my gosh. If I had known a little bit more in advance, I probably would have had another cup of coffee. You know?
But life is what's happening to you while you're busy making other plans. And so...
I know.
Right?
I know. It
is so true. Now, we actually have more time to unroll the carpet and introduce you to people and let them know who you are and why you are the person to be shrink-wrapping with me going forward, as opposed to what we were planning to do was just jump into the segment and start wrapping. But let's tell people, share a little bit about your extraordinary background, your Vegas show, the things you did, who you are, and why you've got your finger on the pulse of what's happening in celebrity world.
Oh, my goodness.
And don't be shy.
not too much on the spot or anything there.
Well, I got to get you never know when you got to step up to the plate.
Right. Well, let me see. When I was growing up, my favorite show was Bewitched.
Oh, well, there you go. Wiggle your nose.
Yes. And I wasn't good at that, but I loved the idea of being Gary Stevens. Absolutely. All I wanted to do was write commercials for a living and live in New York. And so as I got older, I still wanted to go into advertising, but I didn't think I could deal with living in New York City because, you know, I'm kind of a Midwest girl and I like a little space. But I ended up, getting into radio first before I graduated from college. And I loved it, absolutely loved it. I was the worst jock on the face of the earth.
I can't imagine that.
And I really was a disc jockey because I was spinning records. And I was spinning, you know, by 33 at 45 and vice versa. I was just terrible. But I loved it and got to write commercials and do production. And long story short, I ended up in ad agency work, and which I was at an ad agency in your backyard, Dr. Jane Wellsbridge Green.
Oh, wow.
For a million years, they were in the top 10 international ad agencies as far as billing goes. They did stuff like Kibbles and Bits, all kinds of Procter &
Kibbles and Bits. Well, that's the stuff for today's show. Kibbles and Bits. Kibbles and Bits. Got to get some Kibbles and Bits.
I got to tell you, my little dog is laying there very quietly at my feet. So he's getting used to, like, all the business calls from home.
I'm telling you, the only dog that didn't join the party today was Smiley Riley because I said, you know, he's going to start squeaking and barking, and I'm just not going to have that disruption. So off with you. So next time he'll join in.
Oh, good, because he likes to make his presence known.
Yes, he does. Talk about celebrity. He's the Instagram celebrity in the family. Smiley Riley has all the Instagram followers. I don't do Instagram. I'm maybe 30, and he just racks them up, you know, because he's a little soul greeter. Well, before COVID, he was saying hello to everybody everywhere, but now COVID has an impact on, has COVID affected your dog? Riley is so, disappointed and sad because he's in. Even if we take him for walks, we don't have him saying hello to a lot of people and dogs at this point because we want to be COVID savvy. And his whole world has shrunk. You know, he was out and about. The Instagram started because he'd take pictures with people, and we'd put the pictures on Instagram so they could see his greeting and, you know, and jubilant hello. Anyway, back to you and the ad agency.
Oh, well, yeah, so I did that. And then I ended up meeting a parapsychologist, a real, real parapsychologist. And so my deal with him was, groupsy, what you do is legitimate. And actually, I didn't use that word. And I'll make you famous. So we had an amazing run together and did a lot of great things in tourism and reality television. But that's a topic for, like, a few other hours. anyway, and so now I'm doing some cool stuff, like producing your show. And just taking it easy.
Well, but you're leaving out something really important here, and that is that you had your own show, were on the air, and were the talk of Vegas for a lot of years.
Well,
I mean, that's a whole chunk of time.
Oh my gosh! So this was so much fun. We did the show. It was Larry and Dana do Vegas, and it was fun. And it allowed us to meet so many awesome people in the Vegas area. And so, you know, as you know, in your show especially, you talk to people who can really help enhance other people's lives. And
right.
Where I'm interested in that as well, I was more like, hey, let's talk to celebrities and people on stage. But we did interview a lot of people that were very focused on health and you know, enlightenment. But we got to really interview people that were entertainers and
right.
People behind the scenes.
Well, which is amazing. Which is exactly shrink wrap. You know, that's right. Exactly. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, one of the first people that we got to interview was, look, if this is where the coffee would have come in. yeah, right? This was several years ago.
Male or female?
yeah, it was male.
Okay.
Gregory Popovich, who has his own show on the Vegas Strip, and it was featuring cats and dogs, and, you know, like, they were all, like, doing really cool little acts. And turns out all the animals he used were rescued.
Oh, that's, God bless him. Wow.
And because of him, who he had just filmed his first movie, and so he invited us to go to his premiere, which, of course, I was all about, because there the Vogue Theater on Hollywood Boulevard, so like anything about movie theaters and, you know, live playhouses, I'm all about it. And so we went, and we actually got to meet Siegfried and Roy. And we got to
see. Oh, wow.
To get down. And it was just, it was so amazing. And it was like, they're so famous. And they were very, very gracious and nice. And it was very exciting. So the whole Do Vegas run was so much fun. And, yeah, Vegas, what a great place.
What a great place and what a trip. And I absolutely love. Let's tell listeners a little bit about Shrink Wrap. I started Shrink Wrap with HealthyLife.net. We were doing the Shrink Wrap segments for a very long time on the Healthy News at 7. And basically talking about the celebrities and what the celebrities go through and do and the impact that it has on us. Now, interestingly enough, that actually was born of an idea that I had been doing for back in the 90s, I want to say. A very dear friend of mine, Louise Duarte, is a comedian impressionist, and we put together an act called Celebrity Solutions. And she would impersonate all the celebrities, and I would be solutions. I'd give the solution. So we put a motivational act together. The idea was not telling jokes and not giving a psychological lecture, but making it funny. And she would do George Burns. She'd do some of her comedy from her routine. and talk about George Burns, and he'd say, Dr. Greer, so how do you deal with loss? And for each of the different celebrities she did, we did George Burns with loss, and at the time, Kathy Lee Gifford was going through that horrific betrayal with her husband. We used her for betrayal, and we did Joan Rivers for criticism, and we did Barbara Walters for confidence. We had all these different celebrities. We took The Wizard of Oz and used each of the different characters. She did all the different voices for How Do You Learn to Cope? And she would be the humor, and I would be the solution. And we were really trying to integrate the celebrity and the solution, that what you see, the people that you look up to, the people that you revere, the people that seemingly have it all together, well, what are they struggling with? And it's very much like a soap opera. We watch the soap operas to see, well, you know, what are their problems? It gives us that moment of escape. It takes us out of our own problems and struggles. And also, it's very inspirational. We say, you know, well, if Brad Pitt, of all people, can go through a miserable divorce and survive, then, you know, so can I. And so the shrink wrap really was, you know, sort of eked out of that notion, like, what is it that is so intriguing and fascinating about the celebrities? And, you know, I used to say the celebrity stars, they shine so brightly and we all look up to them, but we're puzzled when they fall. So shrink wrap is here to shed light on all. And that's exactly what we're doing. We're looking at what they wrestle with and what they're using and what we can do, too, to make it better.
Don't you find, though, a lot of people out there actually wait for a celebrity to kind of falter and fail? And why is it that people kind of, you know, look for that and embrace the failures?
That is such a great question, and I think it's twofold. Number one, I think it's born of envy, that we're so envious sometimes of people that we want them to not have so much, to not have so much abundance, because it highlights what we lack. So sometimes we look at celebrities and we can align with them, buy their perfume and feel like we're just like them and sort of share in a piece of them. But when they have too much, and we are too envious, we look at them and think, huh, I don't have that. I don't have that beauty. I don't have that money. I don't have that ability. I don't have those opportunities. And so the envy really runs interference, and there's a sort of a relief and I don't want to say happy, but feeling good when they don't have, when they lose something. It's like, see, they're not so fantastic after all.
Oh, I see. Well, my favorite celebrity, if something happens to them, I'm devastated.
Right.
And I'm not even friends with them.
Right. because we feel like we know them, and we take them into our lives and into our hearts. They become our mentors from afar. They become our inspiration. They are our role models. They're the people we want to be like and look up to and strive to emulate. And by the way, this is why celebrities make so much money on their brands, because everybody wants a piece of them. If I exercise in Carrie Underwood's fabulous cute little outfit, then I'm going to be skinny like Carrie Underwood, you know. And I think everybody has that feeling. You know, if I wear the perfume that, Julia Roberts is advertising, then I'm going to be Pretty Woman to my husband. So they impart the, you know, these qualities and the essence of their celebrity. But let me ask you this and let me say this. I know for myself, having met quite a few celebrities in the course of time, there really is something energetically that is very different. You know, when you meet somebody who is a celebrity, there's an energy about them. There's a, you know, you hear it with on Stars, the different shows, Do You Have the It Power? But let's put this on hold, and let's talk about this on our next Shrink Wrap segment, which will be coming up in January. Thank you for stepping in so quickly, Dana Smoller, for Shrink Wrap at on HealthyLife.net at the Doctor on Call Hour. And thank you, everybody, for joining me for another episode of the Doctor on Call at HealthyLife.net. Be sure to stay in touch on my Facebook page, on Twitter at Dr. Jane Greer. You can find out more about me, my books and blogs, at my website, drjanegreer.com. And, of course, I want to invite you to join me for my next Doctor on Call show with more fabulous guests. It could be a pop psych, a shrink wrap, or a Let's Talk Sex Addiction. So be sure to be here. I'm Dr. Jane Greer reminding you, once again, you can always get what you want when you're in the know.